right, welcome to Criterion Deep Dives, spooky season edition. I'm here with Dalton Lee. Hello, Dalton.
What's up, baby?
How's it going?
It's going well, man. How are you?
Good. I'm very glad to have you on the pod.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're going to get some cheap thrills with some spooky session here.
some cheap thrills with a spooky session.
This is what we call the spooky session of the pod. So, so I asked Dalton to be on, and I don't like to restrict my guests in any way, really. Mm-hmm. I like them to be free as a bird, to browse the offerings of the channel. However, it's October, and I wanted to do things a little spooky. So
yeah.
I did request that Dalton choose a spooky movie.
You did limit me, but I'm okay with it. I love spooky movies.
You're a fan, you would say.
I'm a big fan.
Okay.
I think that if you didn't restrict me, I still would have picked like a thriller.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's like an interesting thing, is sort of like the line between like horror movie versus like thriller, and like what makes something like pertinent for Halloween or whatever.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, it's tough because you have like a, you get like a movie like, these aren't Criterion movies, but you get like a movie like Zodiac, directed by like Fincher.
Yeah.
And it's a definite thriller, but it's also like very scary.
Yes.
Because you're seeing like real life stuff. But it wouldn't be like in like the horror movie section necessarily.
Right. Like it's not like October 15th and you're like, we got to turn on Zodiac.
We got to put on this 2 hour and 45 minute long movie about some journalists that try to track down the Zodiac.
And that's what I'm like trying to figure out about like the Halloween movie watch, because I do think that it's especially in this age of COVID-19, it's especially like thought about of like, oh guys, it's October, we gotta watch scary movies, because we're all watching like a shit ton of movies anyways. So this whole idea of like,
yeah,
how do I spend my Halloween season when it's not like trick-or-treating anymore, I'm an adult and I'm also supposed to be staying inside. So the way that we're doing that here on Criterion Deep Dives is that we're doubling up, two episodes a week.
Two a week you're doing.
2 a week.
Damn, dude,
I got two slots to fill left.
Are you allowed to swear on this podcast?
Come on. Really?
All right, I'll just check it.
All right, yeah. But anyway, so Dalton's here. We're going to watch a scary movie. I don't know what it is yet. We're bringing the reveal call back. And so, yeah, I think, you know, Dalton, what movie are we watching?
Okay, so I'm going to take you on my journey here.
Okay. My
search process. So Originally, I wanted to go with a Japanese horror film, because I think traditionally they are the most terrifying.
Mm.
But I was perusing on Criterion, and I came across like all these like short films that I wanted to do, and I figured out you ended up doing them, like a lot of them, with like a prior episode that I'm sure everybody will listen to before this.
Episode 6 with Ellen, where we talked about the Irish films. Return to like, Glenniscall and Coda.
Those are like the ones that I wanted to do, but I was like, I don't know if I'm allowed to do short films, so I like didn't pick those. But then I saw that you could do them. But that's awesome. I'm glad you did them. I'm also going to watch those ones. So I decided, you know what? Like, I wanted to figure out a classic, something I haven't seen before. I have seen the remake of this movie with Nicolas Cage, but I have not seen the original. So we're going to be doing the 1973 British folk horror film, The Wicker Man.
Yes.
Directed by Robin Hardy.
Amazing. This is great, because I have also, of course, been browsing the Criterion for the horror movies. And this is a movie that I've seen like 5 minutes of. Like,
really? I haven't seen any of it. I don't know anything about it.
Like back in like when I was a teenager, like just on like cable TV, like browsed across my TV for a couple minutes. I was like, what is this? So very excited for this. I think we can like kind of do a lot of like Midsommar, Wicker Man talk.
Yeah.
So this is great.
It's supposed to be pretty gnarly.
I might have to watch the remake too.
You should watch the remake. The remake is funny.
All right, guys, this is very exciting. We might have to do this episode from Wicker Park in Chicago. But Dalton and I will be back very shortly with you with our thoughts on The Wicker Man.
Right on, brother.
All right, and welcome back. I'm here with Dalton.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Dalton? Dalton and I have both watched 1973's The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man, not to be confused with the Nicolas Cage
2006 Wicker Man. This was also a part of the Criterion Channel's current 70s horror collection that they have going on. So this was a thrill to watch, and one of many of these films that I've now consumed over the past couple weeks. So I think this is a perfect film to close out spooky season here on Criterion Deep Dives. As you may have seen in the research of this film, somebody at one point called it the Citizen Kane of horror movies, and it just stuck, baby.
I did see that. Is this going to be the last one?
Yeah, I mean, Halloween. So we're recording on Tuesday, October 27th. Halloween is but 4 days from now.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. You know, maybe I still am in a horror movie watching mode, so maybe it'll happen. But I kind of want to, you know, let my guests be free little birds from here on out. So
okay. Yeah, I mean, that checks out. A lot of these, like, I'm definitely still in horror movie watching mode, but like, so much of what is on Criterion is like very loosely horror movie.
It's
like,
not scary.
Wicker Man is not scary in the slightest.
No, it's not scary, but it is incredible. I love this film. I'm upset that I'd never seen it before, so I'm glad that you chose it to finally watch it. So I think you talked about this a little bit, but you wanted to, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about like your choosing this movie and your selection and sort of like the your process in watching it and everything.
Well, I chose it just kind of on a whim, partially because of that one quote that said it was the Citizen Kane of horror movies.
Okay.
I was like, well, at least it's going to be a good movie, you know? But when I was going to watch it, so I don't know what's safe to discuss on this podcast, but the first viewing, I didn't want to like pay that, like I wanted to like just be in it. So I ate an edible, and I really was like, I was on a different planet, and I was just in this movie. Just
okay. I wish you guys could have seen my eyes when Dalton said, "I don't know what's safe to discuss on this podcast." I got really curious. My eyebrows just flew up, but yeah, we can talk about. I mean, it's legal. It's legal in the state of
Illinois. Well, I didn't know if Criterion Deep Dives is a drug-free work environment.
But I mean, have you watched any Criterion films? If there's not some drug use, then I don't know if it's allowed to be on the Criterion. So
No, but the first time I went in, I was just like, I waited till it kicked in, and I was just in my bed with my laptop in my face, just being in this whimsical world of Summer's Isle.
I think one thing I want to mention right off the bat is the fact that obviously we mentioned Midsommar in the opening, and it's a film that is definitely like, I almost feel like there's a resurgence of interest in Wicker Man because of Midsommar coming out. Was that 2 years ago now? Was it
last 2019, year? I thought it was 19.
I guess it was last year. But anyways, what I wanted to say is that Dalton and I did see that movie together in the theater back when that was a thing. And weird experience once again with like seeing a horror movie that is in like full daylight and then being a summer day and seeing this movie Midsommar in a dark movie theater and then going back outside and just being very confused about what time of day it was and the emotions I was supposed to be feeling. So it's kind of like an interesting thing too, what you're saying, like watching this in a dark room with the screen right up to your face. And it's a very, you know, there's not a lot of nighttime. I mean, this movie takes place over the course of basically like 24 to maybe 36 hours, I think. So it's like, maybe two nights, but I think it's just one night. And that's the only time that there's any darkness in the movie
there's only the one nighttime scene.
Right. And which is a wild really- Which is,
it
a,
is
wild
a wild scene. but no, then the second I watched it again in a normal state of mind and like jotted down some notes to actually have something to talk about and not just be like, man, these songs were trippy.
That's fine. I mean, that's kind of my takeaway. I've been listening to the soundtrack a little bit on Spotify, so
it's catchy, a dude.
Catchy tunes.
So good. My first note is this is kind of a musical.
yeah.
And it would be a great play, like musical.
most of the songs are couched in some sort of plot device, like there is a group of people singing for a reason. I think the only song that or it's just happening on the soundtrack, right? Like the mm-hmm. opening Corn Rigs and Barley Rigs is just the whatever diegetic or whatever. But there is the one song that Willow, the innkeeper's daughter, is singing to seduce oh shit, what's his name?
Starts with an H.
Oh, it's Sergeant Howie. Sergeant Howie.
Howie, yeah.
To seduce Howie, and this goes on forever. Just her, like, nakedly in her room drumming on the walls.
What a scene, dude.
Trying to seduce his ass. But yeah, that scene is fully musical, sort of like, there's no reason, she's alone, there's no reason for her to be singing.
Nope.
And it was funny, too, because I think, like, one or two songs in, Chelsea was walking by and she was like, is this a musical? And I was like, no, it's not a musical, it's just all like happening in the and then when the song with Willow came on, I was like I guess it's kind of a musical.
Yeah, so like a little bit of musical.
yeah so the music's really great. There was, I think, the music coordinator, the composer's name was Paul Giovanni. Not to be confused with Paul Giamatti, but...
No, it was Paul Giamatti.
And then there was... they just formed a little, like, folk band named Magnet. And that's, if you want to find the soundtrack, it's by a group called Magnet.
Highly recommend.
It looks like they released... It looks like a couple years later, they were like, let's get the band back together. And they made just, like, their own album, which is pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, this music, like, it's funny. I had never, like, I don't know if I want to say never, but, like, I'm a big fan of, as many are, of the band Fleet Foxes. And, of course, they're a band from the Pacific Northwest. And so their sort of, like, folksy hipster aesthetic, I think, was always just sort of lumped in with, like, the Pacific Northwest and that vibe and everything. But, like, I realized, I think, especially watching this movie, too, that a lot of the folk that they're doing is really sort of like English folk type songs. And what made me think of this too, is that like they have a music video for their song, Fool's Errand, which essentially feels like a scene from The Wicker Man. It's, it's a group of people in like colorful garb doing this like coordinated dance. And they're on this like English hillside and they're like kind of casting spells. And it just feels like the procession scene of this movie. And I think that's cool too. It's like listening to this soundtrack, it's like it sounds kind of like a Cat Stevens or any sort of like acoustic folk music of that era of the 70s. So yeah, that's a great part of it up front. And it's funny that they like seemingly became a big part of the movie for them, you know.
Huge favorite song on the whole thing, Innkeeper's daughter, or the landlord's daughter.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
It's kind of like a classic sort of a sailor chanty.
Yeah.
Very bawdy lyrics.
Oh yeah.
They talk about what's between, you know, they say something about what's between the left knee and the right knee.
No, like... the left toe and the right toe.
Okay. And you get the sense that all of these men on the island have actually, that they're like, once again, they're singing this song in reality, like, yes, we've all slept with the innkeeper's daughter or whatever.
Or they want to, dude. She's a babe. She's so attractive.
So I don't know if you read this too, but apparently in that scene, she had a butt double. She was not. Well, I read two things. I read an interview with the director, Robin Hardy. And apparently, according to him, she did not want her butt on screen. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I quote, she said, my ass is like a slope. And, but then I read something else that she was actually dating Rod Stewart at the time, this actress. And, okay. Rod Stewart like refused to let her be seen, like see her butt in the film.
He was like, boobs. Okay. No butt. That butt's mine.
So, The butt double brings up some questions for me, because they could have just, well, one, okay, if you're her and you're saying, I don't want to show my butt in this scene, can't the director just be like, okay, you can just leave your clothes on for this scene? It doesn't really matter.
I don't think that was an option back then.
Number two, can't you just film this shot from the waist up? Like, he just wanted to see her butt.
He did, dude.
He wanted to show a butt.
He wanted to show a butt. It was, like, a very, like, witchy, sensual, like, it did dive into, like, the pagan...
That's true.
Like, witchcraft type thing. I don't think it quite would have had the same effect with clothes on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but later on, you see the group of women all dancing naked as they jump through a flame.
Yeah.
Inside of a Stonehenge-looking setting. So, yeah, I think you're right. It has the witchy element to it. So, but yeah, so I think, you know, this movie... I think I mentioned this before, but I had seen a brief snippet of this movie, I think back in high school, maybe. It was just like on TV. And the scene that I saw was the Maypole song, where there's like the guy kind of teaching the children, and he's like, and on this tree, there was a limb, and on this limb, there was a branch. Pretty catchy little tune.
It is a catchy tune, man. I had a good time with that. It was like, it was way more fun than the Maypole song. Or like the Maypole song in Midsommar.
I don't really remember the song where they sing.
They didn't really sing anything. They just did the dancing and like screaming. I like this one more. It was more catchy and fun.
So, you know, talking about this versus Midsommar, which is something that everyone wants to do, I think. This is why you came here for the pod, for the Midsommar talk. But it's actually a pretty different movie, like in tone. It's a very different movie in tone, and in a lot of ways too, in pacing and everything. So, I mean, I think it's only sort of a spiritual cousin to Midsommar. But obviously, there's a lot of direct comparisons in terms of the sort of European paganism, religious rituals. The they're both kind of like happening at these May Day harvest festivals or whatever, so you know, naturally the comparisons are there. But like, I once again, like you said, it wasn't necessarily a scary movie. It just had a goofy, sinister feel to it, you know.
Ish, dude. Like I said, it was truly the most whimsical horror movie I've ever seen. And like, the difference, I guess, in Midsommar, you're like rooting for Danny, and I don't even consider Midsommar like too scary of a movie.
No, but it has its moments, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's more like unsettling.
It's dread, this, like,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
This one is more just like, I really loved the island. I loved all the people on the island, and I hated the main character. And I was like, I hope this guy dies. Like, he was so annoying. Yeah. Like, how could you be more annoying? He's like a hyper Christian cop who like yells at everybody who's having fun.
Right, exactly. He's very concerned about the witchy ways on this island.
Yeah.
He's truly, and that's the other thing too, in this scene with Willow, where she's trying to seduce him. I think the next morning she comes into his room and he's like, I won't do it until marriage, basically. So we learn that he's also a virgin, which
is
going to be a key plot point.
Watch out. But she's just like, okay, nerd. See you later.
Yeah. She's like, okay, never mind. Not interested anymore. But that is one flashback we see too during that scene when he's like resisting temptation is we see a flashback to him receiving communion in church. But yeah, he's not only is he a devout Christian, but he's like very concerned about the religion of others, right? He's so, you know, first of all, he's there to investigate the disappearance of a missing girl, and he's got a photo of her, and seemingly can't find her. He even tracks down her mom, or supposedly her mom, and she's very cagey about the whole subject. She's like, "No, I don't have a daughter." Like, basically everybody's saying that like this Rowan Morrison, but she does not exist or hasn't been there for a while or whatever. But so as he's investigating this, he's learning about the people of Summer Isle, the fictional Scottish island they're on. There are religious practices, and one other thing that I love too is like the very beginning of this movie, it's a little Blair Witchy because it has a title card that's like, the producers of this film would like to thank Lord Summer Isle for letting us observe his people's religious practices.
I Dude, yeah, I love that shit. That's like the same thing as in like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre that it opens up with like the little title card and stuff. It's great.
Do they do that? They're like these events. It's like kind of like a found footage type thing. Almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. I think it's like of course Blair Witch. What's the other one?
Paranormal Activity was a big one.
Yeah, yeah. Paranormal activities were great because of the utilization of like new technology or sort of like the idea of a security camera. You know, probably not the first film to do that, but maybe the most popular, at least in America. So, but yeah, so they have the title card, which is fun too because it's like, even though you know it's a fictional movie, like I'm watching that and I see it and I'm like, oh wait, is this based off of something where it's like the producers are actually thinking like going to this island to learn about it or whatever, but of course it's not the case. So but yeah, so he's investigating, he's seeing their religious rituals and some of their beliefs, and like some of the early things he's introduced to is he sees the Maypole dance. He is in the classroom and it's like, I think it's a classroom of all the girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, all the boys are doing the Maypole dance.
Yes. And then the teacher asks some question about like, what is this thing? What does the Maypole represent? And they're all like, the penis.
Yes. The phallic penis. Thank you.
And Sergeant Howie is just shocked. He's like, may I see you outside, miss?
Oh man.
Clutching his pearls.
It's funny like how like, so he rolls up to the island on this like seaplane.
Yeah.
And then he gets out and immediately starts yelling at everybody. He goes, I want a dinghy.
Which, yeah, he comes in hot.
Yeah, a dinghy is a boat to come get him, to bring him to the island. And he's immediately fucked with by these old men in some dope ass sweaters.
Oh yeah.
Like, these old seamen.
Those looked cozy.
Yeah, man. But yeah,
I still
just
to
like,
this day not regret when I was in Ireland not buying one of those like full like in the countryside like some little cottage I was at, these sheep wool sweaters or whatever.
Dude, you got to get one. I have a 100% wool sweater and it's bomb. Yeah, it is so hot though. You can only wear it if it's negative 11 degrees.
Right, like the circumstances that you need it are so rare. Like
mm-hmm.
honestly, the best circumstances is like. Being outside in the winter in COVID-19.
Yeah.
to do things. So, but, yeah, for sure. Like it's immediately it's immediately there's tension between him and the locals.
Yeah. There's they're giggling at him. They're like, oh yeah, she has like May, whatever her name is, has a daughter, but her name's not Rowan, and that's not her. And then they giggle at him, and he's like, what?
Yeah, for sure. But what they also, some of the stuff that, like, there's written on the chalkboard in the classroom is stuff about the toadstone and the hagstone, teaching about these things, and it says, the toadstone protects the newborn from the weird women. He goes across to the cemetery soon after, and there's a gravestone that says, here lies Beach Buchanan, protected by the ejaculation of serpents.
If you like catch like glimpses of the other like headstones around that like are just like the camera's painting by, like one of them said like erected, another one said like phallic. Like they're just like dropping the shit in everywhere.
Oh man, yeah. Yeah, there's jars of foreskins, of brains, of hearts.
Yeah.
There's full pigs.
just like sitting in a vat.
So gross. So yeah, to be fair, I would probably be a little freaked out if I encountered these things, but the people seem lovely, right?
They did. I feel like I would feel it at home.
And of course that's the thing, is like you're saying this dude's annoying, and that's kind of the way that the movie's set up, is that he's like a bit of a prude and that he's kind of being rude to these people. But of course there is some, like, he's there for a legitimate reason to investigate this girl's disappearance. And of course, you know, that, and that's what makes the turn so great in this movie, when, when things reveal themselves, you know? But basically like he gets to the point where he has to go up to the big dog himself. Lord Summer Isle.
Christopher Lee, baby.
Christopher Count, Lee. Count Dooku. An absolutely iconic performance. I can't say enough. I just, I love watching him do his thing. I was reminded of how much I love Christopher Lee, and was also reminded of one of my favorite performances of his, which is in this movie called The Stupids. I don't know if you've ever seen The Stupids.
I haven't seen it.
That's all I'll say. Just check out, just like Google Christopher Lee, The Stupids.
Okay, I'll watch it.
It's really dumb, but you'll enjoy it. But yeah, anyways, Christopher Lee, you know, probably most well known as Saruman from Lord of the Rings, as well as Count Dooku from Star Wars. Yeah. So he meets up and he meets up with Sergeant Howie, and I actually really liked like at this point in the movie too, when they kind of started to get into the details of the religious rituals and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the writing was really good. Like, I loved their conversation.
Yeah, it's amazing. He like, I just love like the like how calm and cool he is, and just explaining like his like reasonings for why they switch back from like the Christian God to like the old gods of like the sun God and the earth God and the water, like stuff like that. He's just like, he's nailing it, dude. This is like a charming ass Christopher Lee, like dressed up like,
it's amazing.
There's just like a, just like a rich English or like a rich Scottish dude who just lives in a mansion. And he's just like, oh yeah, sometimes you got to sacrifice people, you know?
Yeah, it's I don't, these aren't like perfect comparisons, but this role of his kind of reminded me of like my favorite all-time cinematic character, Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood, as well as I think the better comparison is maybe almost Moondog from Beach Bum.
a nice mix of Moondog and Daniel Plainview.
Yeah, right. He has his moments of each, I think. Because he is sinister, right? You don't trust him, but he's also hilarious. Can you refresh my memory a little bit about the reasoning from, so it's like his grandfather, or is it his grandfather in 1868? I have that written down. That's when the island was purchased, and they purchased it for its volcanic soil. Mm-hmm. To grow some really special like hybrid apples, apparently.
Yeah, so his grandfather purchased it, and then I think the idea was that like the island was not prospering, and then they came up with all these new like strains of fruit that could grow on the island.
Yeah.
And it started to prosper, and then his grandfather like slowly pushed like all the priests and ministers out with like his like own ideals, and it just like took over.
It's like because, a purge.
Yeah, cuz he had brought like so much to the island that all the workers are like originally just working for work and money and food, and then eventually they were just like, this guy's a god.
Yeah, like, this is like some Colonel Kurtz shit.
Yeah, he's the Lord of Summer's Island, and now we listen to whatever he says. But I don't think that, like, I don't think the sacrifices started until like I think they maybe started then. Like, I don't know if they referenced it.
It seems like it's a new thing, maybe. I think this is a new idea that they're trying out.
I think it's the first one that they're doing this year with Christopher Lee.
Did not go well for anyone. But he's talking about the, and of course this is like the, I think this is probably the most like interesting central question to this movie, is like, how much does Lord Summer Isle believe of this himself, you know, like versus him using this religion as a tool to like keep his people in order. Like, is he a believer himself? And this will become like a central question at the end of the film in mm-hmm. a cool confrontation. But one of the things that they're talking about is on his way to see Lord Summer Isle, Howie witnesses the women dancing through the jumping through the fire, like I mentioned earlier, and he asks like, "What the hell are they doing? Like, why are they naked? Why are they at Stonehenge?" And he mentions the word parthenogenesis, which is essentially asexual reproduction, a real thing that happens in some animals. Sergeant Howie is so flummoxed by this. Like, how can you be teaching this? Like, a man is, a baby is created between a man and a woman and sexual union or whatever. And he's like, how? And then Lord Summer Isle responds, like, how is this a strange belief? your religion was your God was conceived himself, the son of a virgin, impregnated by a ghost.
Like, yeah, he's really putting on like a masterclass with this dude. Like, I think of it like, so Sergeant Howie is also like the only night scene he had just seen like a bunch of like just like like teenage to like 20, like mid 20 year olds just like banging out on this lawn. There's like there's like 20 couples out there just really
going. They're not on a lawn, they're right on the beach. I think,
are they on the beach?
I think they're just like a little beach. Yeah,
they're just going at it. And then he's like, he walks to this like cemetery and sees some like naked lady like holding on to a gravestone and like moaning and screaming. So he's like a little, I think he's getting to about his end, but like I feel like, so to get like,
he's at it.
Yeah, to get like super over analytical, I feel like this whole like island, and especially Lord Summer's Isles with like his like kind of like retro like 60s 70s like hippie vibe, like is like the old, like this new wave of thinking and ideas that are pushing out this old English like Christianity, like gotta respect the queen and the king, and like everything is like done by the Bible and that's it. And then they're just like, why are you thinking like that, man? Like, just go out and like, you could just have sex with the hot landlord's daughter and have fun. Like, what are you doing?
yeah dude, absolutely. I mean, 1973, this was like a real, this was touching on real, like a real big like social conflict of the day. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the people also remind me of like the hippie, the Manson family in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, like that sort of depiction. And so of course this was happening all across the world. It was happening in America and in England. And I mean, you think about like bands like Led Zeppelin and stuff. Like, Led Zeppelin was a huge popular rock band, and they were definitely into like paganism and Satanism. Mm-hmm. And like all sorts of creepy weird shit. But it's also interesting you say that too about England, because like there's a line too at some point where Sergeant Howie tells someone like, you are the subject of a Christian country. And it led me to look, and I was curious. I knew that there was some sort of relationship, but like, what is the status of sort of like church and state in the UK? And of course, like the monarch of the United Kingdom, the Queen currently is like the head of the Church of England. So there is like a religion and state tie in there. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that there's like, in their parliament, there are 26 seats that are reserved for like bishops. So it's, this is out of like 800 seats or something like that. But still, like, that's crazy. You could argue, right, that like, it doesn't make that big of a difference. Like, you think about the United States and our government, our politicians, like so many of them are Christians, especially on the right. So it's like, what difference does it really make? Like, they're basically bishops. Like,
you kind of like have to be, like, you have to like run on like a religious platform in a lot of states. But yeah, he says that in the conversation, that conversation with Lord Summer's Isles, when he first goes to like the big mansion, and he's just like, at this point he's like screaming. And Christopher Lee's just like hanging out, just like smirking, like, whatever, dude.
Totally unfazed.
Yeah.
Everything is going according to plan. I like when he comes back. I think he comes back to the house soon after, and like Lord Summerisle's there with a woman like playing the piano, and he's got like he has like a wig and an ascot on, and he really in this scene also reminded me of like Sacha Baron Cohen from Les Mis, or like a Liberace type character, sort of like just going for it. So
yeah, she's just like laying on the ground in a nightgown, and they're just singing songs. Wow, what a life this dude's living. He's like really living the life.
It's just like in media res when he comes back to him, it's like this song is happening. It's like, yeah. But of course, like one other thing that's a key plot point that's kind of happening in the background is that when he's first getting dinner at the Green Man Inn, where he's has lodging, and is almost seduced by Willow McGregor, he's asking for peaches or apples. Give me some of those famous Summer Isle apples. And she's like, no apples this year. We sold them all already, or like we're out of the crop. And he's like, that's ridiculous. But of course, this is going to be a key point, is essentially like this is the year that their harvest is currently failing and not not producing anything. And Howie starts to piece this together, right? Like there's there's a photo of the May Queen or whatever it's called in this movie, sort of like on the wall of the inn for every year, and the one from the last year is currently missing. And I think there's even like a little dusty outline of where it's supposed to be or whatever. So he's like, that's funny. Like, why is that photo not up there? But, so he's like, he's starting to get a sense of some things afoot, you know?
He definitely is figuring out that like things are going on. And like, two fun facts about the Green Man Inn. One, those pictures are like exactly like the Midsommar pictures of the May Queens. And then the Green
Man
Inn.
It's a cool device. Like,
yeah. The Green Man Inn, like, sign looks a lot like the dude in Midsommar, the English dude that gets like hung and has like flowers put in his eyes. It looks so similar to that. So I think Ari Aster might have been pulling some stuff here. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're
right. But yeah, they're also like kind of like subtly giving him all of these warnings that like they're giving this dude like kind of an out. Like they give him an option to not be a virgin anymore, which he doesn't take. He doesn't take, so that would have gotten him out of there. They like, I think like.
Well, and to clarify, it you say it would have gotten him out of there. It's later on essentially to get through it. Like they, you know, they get to the point and he finds the girl and he thinks she's about to be sacrificed, but she runs away and she basically like leads Howie right to everyone else on a hill. So of course they're gonna sacrifice him in a Wicker Man, the name of the movie. But they kind of lay out these requirements, like you're a virgin, you came here on your own will, which I thought was debatable.
a little bit debatable, but yeah, I think they're playing loose with it.
Yeah, they said those two things. I don't remember what else. I think there was like one other thing.
You have to be like a representation of the king, which he is, like as a police officer.
Right.
They like, dude, that was. The reveal is one of my favorite scenes I've seen in a long time in a movie. Christopher Lee is just like a straight up Bond villain, like mocking this dude. So happy that he just tricked. He's like, we've been playing you since you arrived on the island. We've been manipulating every thought you've ever had.
Right. Which is really interesting when you look back and you think about everything that happened, right? Mm-hmm. Like, once again, the seduction by Willow. Like, what was the grand point there? Like, what would she have done if he had acquiesced to her?
I think they're giving him an option, man. I think they're like giving this dude a way out, but he doesn't take it.
Right. So it's like free will in the sense that he came to the island to like search for this person, even though it was based on a lie. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And of course it's like, for me, the free will aspect doesn't work when it's like, hey, like, we're going to sacrifice you in a Wicker Man. Would you like to partake in this? Yes, sure. Okay, that works. Like, it still seems like they kind of tricked him, but he only gets to this point because he knocks out the innkeeper, McGregor, and steals his suit, which leads to just an incredible scene of the procession. And we get to see Christopher Lee in his long black wig, in his yellow leotard with his like purple dress on, and he has these two like scepters, and he's leading the procession and the dance just magnificently. Meanwhile, Howie has impersonated McGregor, and he's in his fool costume, like a court fool, the jester, and he's in the front and he's not really like dancing as well as everyone else, and Christopher Lee is like, what's gotten into you, McGregor? Put some put some caper in your dance. And he's like, you must have been drinking too much at your bar.
Nailing it. Yeah. But that was all like, I mean, that was all
guys,
part of the
stop
plan.
Stop listening to this podcast. Just go watch Christopher Lee.
But that was all part of their plan as well, which is crazy. Like, they like really like plot. It's the same, kind of the same as Midsommar, where they plotted like everything out. Like, they knew what everybody was gonna do. They like left the right doors open, but they also like, I don't know if you noticed, they were like warning him all the time.
Yeah.
And like at one point, like the innkeeper or the landlord's daughter says like, wouldn't want you to be here on May Day, not the way you feel. And like, yeah, it's like playing on words because he like is not like feeling well in the morning, but it's more so like playing on like his beliefs. And then also like the girls in the schoolhouse with the beetle and the like little creepy girl that goes like the beetle goes round and around until it gets caught.
Yes. Yes. She has a little beetle like inside her desk or whatever. Yeah. 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 And they, and I also feel like they do that about like, you don't want to be here on May Day because they're manipulating him in the sense that like, he's, they've laid the trap for him to piece together. Like he thinks they're sacrificing the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So like he's being warned in the sense of like something terrible is going to happen. And that's why he feels like his duty, as a policeman and a man of the law to like stick around and find this girl. But, she betrays his ass.
She gets him. She gets him so good.
Yeah. I do like the sort of, when he's talking to the school teacher and the school teacher like basically admits that Rowan is dead, or at least that's the story that they're spinning. But she's like, we don't have a word for that here. Like, we don't believe in calling things dead. Like, things are just like passed on to the earth. And it, of course, it's sort of this very pagan thing, but like a sort of like belief and idea that I can totally get on board with. Like, I love that sort of idea of like everything being one with the earth, you know, like,
so
it's
much
great. I feel like you can suffuse that in any religion too. Like, it doesn't have to be like, you know, at odds.
Absolutely. So much more calming and nice than like you have to do everything good or you go to like this eternal damnation in hell. It's just like you die and then you get to turn into like a flower or a bunny, and that's great.
This is a pro pagan pod, everybody.
This is I might be a pagan now after watching this. There was no part of the entire movie that made me go like, I don't want to live on Summer Isle.
Do you think that Christopher Lee is like your great grandfather?
Oh, maybe. Give me some money, dude.
I guess that's a little, well, I don't know. I don't know if the math would work out there. Christopher Lee, we should also say, of course, a legend of the screen, but also a legend of the of music. He like released he passed away a couple years ago, I think, but at the ripe old age of like 100 almost. But like, he used to release all these metal albums. Like, he would like do, I don't know if he was also playing music, but like he made a bunch of like metal albums where he would just like do his deep bass voice over like metal music or whatever.
He was slaying on the piano, man. Like, really really hitting some low notes. It was great.
Yeah, yeah. You can see that he's having just a great time. But yeah, so basically, you know, the plot is revealed to him that he's going to be sacrificed, and he's like, not going to happen. Like, don't do it. You're making a mistake. Like, and then I love, and once again, I think this is like back to the point I was making about like, does Lord Summer Isle believe in this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Howie is really great. Like a really great chess move on his part. He's like, if you kill me this year and the crops still fail next year, you'll have no choice but to go even higher as a sacrifice to the gods, like, and sacrifice Lord Summer Isle himself. And there's like a moment of fear in Summer Isle's face, but then he's just like, it will not fail.
It will not fail.
Which I love. It's just so good.
Yeah, you can see him like double down on it. He like, you could kind of see there that they're like, they're all in on this. The whole village is in on this guy, and he's in on like this belief.
I don't think that he believes it, though. I just think that he knows that it's kind of like a Trumpy thing. Like, he knows that come next year, if the crop fails again, like, Howie may have said this, but like, he's gonna find someone else to sacrifice. Like, he's not gonna he's gonna come up with a reason that it doesn't have to be him, and then everyone's gonna go along with it.
See, I felt like he believed it just because he was like raised on all of these beliefs. It was like the same that Howie was raised on Christianity, and it's so like deeply ingrained in him. I was just gonna say, but then they start dragging his ass up and like ripping his clothes off, and he's just like wincing at like his clothes being cut off. Like, nothing bad's happening to him. He's just like, ah, ah, just as like a couple, like somebody like rips his shirt off, like he's getting yeah. beat up.
I know that we were like talking about him being kind of an annoying character for a while, but like I do think this actor did a great job. Like he kind of has a funny performance in its own right too. And there's just a lot of great comedy of the scene of him like really frantically running around town searching for Rowan. And there's like this guy in this big horse costume who's like kind of taunting him from like one end of the alley to the other.
Yeah, there's the little girl who like fakes being like, he opens like a cabinet and this little girl falls out with some fake blood in her mouth, and then he like looks down at her and she giggles and runs away. Like the whole town's just fucking with this dude. But he does
like, he runs into this like houseboat or whatever, and like finds this giant like salmon thing where he's like looking in a cabinet like trying to find her, and the guy turns around, he's just like, my costume.
Salmon is wisdom.
Like this whole scene kind of reminded me of like the sequence in The Shining where like they see the guy in the bear suit like getting a blowjob or whatever, or mm-hmm. just like when is it wet or whatever the character's name is, Shelley Duvall in The Shining, like running around and like really frantically like trying to like get help, and she's just like seeing all these goofy ghosts.
Shit, I forgot what I was gonna say. Never mind.
There's another thing that this movie reminded me, like that reminded me of The Shining too, just the very beginning where it's sort of like following this helicopter over these valleys, like going to the place, because that's kind of like the beginning of The Shining too, is just sort of like these shots from above following the car with the main family heading to the Overlook Hotel.
But instead of some like ominous like tones, you just have a folk song going, corn rigs and barley.
I learned that that's a traditional folk song about the Celtic festival of Lammas, something like that. It's like a harvest festival, and it describes this this tryst in the barley out in the fields. And I think it's so funny, like this, especially too, this like being a real folk song, sort of like, that just seems so uncomfortable, man, getting it on out in a hayfield or whatever. Like,
I mean, don't knock it till you try it, brother.
I'm not knocking it. I'm just talking about comfort.
They wouldn't write a song about it if it wasn't great. I also
didn't really know what a rig is, but.
Neither do I.
Yeah, it's fine.
I have no idea. I barely know what barley is. I know it's in beer.
It's in beer.
That's all I care about. But I was going to say, I also, as much as I hated this character, I do think that the actor did a great job. I think that, like great actors can make you, like, really despise a character. Like, think of, like what's her face? I think her name's, like, Skyler on, like, Breaking Bad, where she's just, like, a sensible person, but she's doing such a good job of, like, playing like the antithesis of Walter White, that you just right. despise her for no reason. She gets like death threats in real life because people are so mad at her.
Right, definitely. I mean, any sort of like great villain, I feel like, is that way. Like, you're almost like it's once again, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's kind of the thing with Leo's character in that movie, where Al Pacino's character is like, you can't be the heavy, like you have to have a leading man role. Like,
yeah,
there's a reason your career isn't where you want it to be, because like the audience naturally sides with the protagonist. So,
but this guy's not even the villain, but he had to know that he was the bad part of all of this. Like,
yeah,
I feel like maybe not in the 70s, but I feel like he had to, like, there's probably people that were going to this like, no, he's like out there representing the Lord.
Yeah. It's really interesting to think about like what this would have played like at the time, like what people thought of this movie. You know, it seems like it wasn't a very big hit, or it was sold off as like a B movie to the Don't Look Now. And the director was like furious about this or whatever. There's also like a whole controversy, like a lot of these movies, over like the final cut. Like, it was apparently like trashed and lost, and they're like still trying to track it down or whatever, but it's like, okay, there's like one scene where it's like actually her butt or something. Like, that's it. Like, is that the director's cut? Like,
yeah, I was reading a little bit about that too. And like that, like a lot, some of the footage got lost from the director's cut, but also like, I don't, like, as good as this, as much as I love this movie, as good as it was, I don't think that, like, I think Robin Hardy was a bit of a one hit wonder. He never did anything else. Like,
Yeah, he tried to. Well, he made like a spiritual sequel to this.
Yeah.
In 2011. So almost 40 years later, 30, you know, and then I guess in 2015 he was like started a Kickstarter to try to make like a trilogy for The Wicker Man. And
yeah.
He couldn't raise $200,000, like, and then he died a year later.
God. Shit.
Robin, we love you.
We love you, Robin. Thank you for this movie.
You know, here's the thing, though, man. Is like, I think I read he was like making commercials in New York. It's like he's probably like a successful dude in the ad world, and he just, you know, chances are neither one of us is ever gonna get to make a movie. So
yeah, he did. I mean, he did better than we will do, but you know, how do you make this movie and then just like trail off? That's crazy.
I just don't think it was very popular in 1973.
Yeah, that makes sense, but.
They were missing out, man. They were missing out. It's weird. It's almost like it's like a document of the time. It's like you're living through the 70s with hippie culture and whatever, and it just like maybe wasn't as interesting or as good as like as just like a straight up like zombie horror movie or something mm-hmm. like that, you know? But yeah, so you know, the final scene or the final twist of the movie is the Wicker Man itself. And lead him up, and
he's getting.
Oh dear Lord Jesus Christ! My Jesus Christ!
He's getting drug up, and he goes, "Oh God! Oh Jesus Christ!"
So they actually include that soundbite on the soundtrack. It's the only dialogue from the movie. It's like at the end of this ominous song. Oh Jesus Christ!
I died both times I watched it. That was that was like. Man, if there was like a dictionary, like if you could put a video in the dictionary for overacting, it would be that. It was a lot.
So he sees the Wicker Man. Of course, he gets placed in it, and they burn him, and he dies. But
they burn him up with a bunch of innocent animals. I was very sad about the animals. I didn't care about him.
That was sort of this question of like. He was accused of like maybe some of these animals got killed, and he was like, "No, when the fire got too hot, we put it out." And we
did they really? Did he, I didn't know anything about this, but I meant in the world of the movie.
Yeah. So apparently, like, yeah. Apparently, I don't think they killed any of the animals. But it sounds like they started to burn the thing while there are animals in it.
Oh no.
Yeah, dude, it's a little gross. But he's like, yeah, we started it, then we would put the fire out, and then we'd start again. And it's like, okay, doesn't seem like, seems like you could cut around that and edit around that.
Yeah, but. It doesn't feel like you needed to do it with the animals in it. Like, just shoot the animals in there and then, like, just show the fire panned out. Like, what?
Yeah. Also does it for the purposes of the sacrifice. It seems like that's the whole point of sacrificing the human. It's like, you're sacrificing one of your own. Why do you need all these animals? Like,
I guess to like double down, like, cause right. he even like Lord Summerisle said like animals are like flippant and not enough for a sacrifice. But I guess they were just like, let's not even risk it. Let's just do a guy and the animals.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just funny, right? It's like an extra, it's like icing on the cake. It's like imagining this God deciding and he's like, they did sacrifice a human, but there were only two chickens. I will not grant their requests.
Shit.
I was interested too. So it's like, and so I ended up looking up like if this is based in history at all. And the idea of the Wicker Man apparently comes from a single sentence in Julius Caesar's, book about the Gallic Wars, which was like 100 BC or whatever. And he basically said that the Gauls that they were fighting had practices of human sacrifice and that they used wicker men to burn people alive. And I think that historically, like the human sacrifice in this era and or in this area in this time period, like I do think that was documented as like being a thing that sometimes happened. But it sounds like the Wicker Man was totally made up. And of course, it's interesting because it's like, this journal may as well have been like propaganda at the time of like sort of like vilifying the people that they mm-hmm. were fighting against to win like hearts and minds back home.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. Like, of course in the 70s, they, you know, really they have science, they have no excuses, but like I don't know, man. Can you blame the people like in like earlier agrarian time periods who like their crop failed, they had no food to survive, and they were like, they didn't understand science, and they're like, look, we gotta sacrifice somebody. That's what the gods want.
That's like, all there is to do. I read that same thing, and I was thinking like something similar. I was like, ah, it checks out. That's like, I would, like, somebody probably thought of that, and that makes sense. But right. Another tidbit from, not to keep bringing up Midsommar too much, but
oh, so it's all right.
The 2006 Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage, when he's like doing the part where he's like sneaks into the group.
So I've never seen the remake.
So this will be like a little like thing for you. The part where he like, instead of like wearing the full costume to sneak into the group, he wears like a bear costume.
Oh.
And then
yeah.
In Midsommar, they put Christian in a bear and then burn him, essentially exactly the same as the Wicker Man with like other sacrifices, just in a different structure.
Yeah.
So that's like a little fun fact for the crowd out there.
Yeah, for sure. I loved all the last Halloween, all the bear and May Queen Halloween costumes.
Yeah, that was great.
I thought that was a good one.
If I even do anything for this Halloween, I really just want to dress up as one of the old men on Summer Isle in a sweater and a great yeah, right. hat.
A pipe and a hat. Yeah,
yeah, and I'm gonna learn the whole...
Scuff your nose.
I'm going to learn the whole Landlord's Daughter song and just sing it all night.
I'm ready for that, man. I'll sing the Landlord's Daughter with you. I'll sing this whole damn soundtrack.
I will also sing it. Everybody out there needs to watch this movie. It's so good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting. Like, I don't know. So the remake of The Wicker Man, like, it's not very good, is it? Or at least it doesn't. I haven't heard good things in my research.
It's not good. It's a like slightly different. He's like, so he
this
gets.
This was like back when Nicolas Cage was still trying to be a serious actor.
Yeah.
Like, he hadn't gone full like camp yet.
No, this is what, like, I think this is like his downturn, but he gets brought there by like his ex-wife, who's like, my daughter. So this is taking place in like Oregon or some shit. Like,
right.
An island off of Oregon. And he's like, and she's like, my daughter got taken. This is his ex-wife. He's like, all right, I'm coming to figure this out. And it's pretty much an island of all women. The sacrifice is a little bit more like fertility based. It's a lot more brutal. Like when they're like surrounding him at the end and like taking him, they like violently.
It's more of like a traditional scary movie.
Yeah, they like violently break his legs. Like,
oh jeez.
So
it's not a harvest. It's not a crop issue. They're like, the women are trying to become fertile.
It's like about like honey and fertility. It's a lot about bees and honey.
Interesting.
And this one, they put like a bee cap on his head and he gets stung all over his face. And then they burn him in the Wicker Man. They really fuck with Nicolas Cage.
It's just like that M. Night Shyamalan movie with the bees. The Happening.
Oh, yeah. With Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah.
What a flick, dude.
So what's interesting about that, you said that you have been watching some of these other like 70s horror Criterion movies, and it's interesting that the you watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I know like there are other ones on there like Last House on the Left, The Hills Have Eyes, and I feel like those movies like were all remade in the like mid to late 2000s period, right? So it's like, it's interesting that like that amount of time passes and they and like including The Wicker Man, they were like, yeah, we're gonna remake all these movies. Like, I don't know why that happened, but it's just kind of interesting.
I think people just like run out of new material. Like, we're getting like a little bit of a horror renaissance right now, but we're getting a lot of remakes and other things, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it like takes somebody to come along and like kind of revitalize the genre a little bit. But like, think of like, they just remade Rebecca by Alfred Hitchcock, like, for no goddamn reason. Like, it's just
other
like,
than just to put Armie Hammer and Lily James on screen together. Yeah. Again. Did you watch that?
I have not watched it yet. I heard awful things. I also heard apparently it's more of a remake of the book and not the Hitchcock movie. So it's not supposed to be like that movie.
It's always interesting. Like, when something that I'm kind of excited for, like something sort of prestige-y film-wise comes out on Netflix, and then like they don't put it, like they don't give it a lot of attention on the main page. Like you don't really see a lot of articles online about it, and it's just like, oh, they kind of didn't promote that movie, and then it's just like, yeah, well, then I hear that it's not good. Like it kind of makes sense, right?
I did recently watch what in one of the previous episodes you said was like one of your favorite horror movies, which is The Thing. I watched it.
Yeah.
I watched it the same day that I watched The Wicker Man, and I was very high, and I was like, I'm freaking out, man. This is amazing.
Those movies are kind of freaky with the sort of like you can't trust like it kind of like a whodunit, like you can't trust if somebody's like really an alien or a human or whatever. It's kind of like this video game that everybody's playing, the Among Us game or whatever.
It's like it's like Clue but with a big alien monster that keeps sucking dogs up.
And actually, so yeah, I had seen The Thing years back, but then we rewatched it earlier this year, and it led me to want to watch two movies. One Chelsea suggested I'd never seen, which was the original Alien, which is so good. And
I love that movie.
Yeah, I had never seen it, and I love it. It was really good. But the movie that it reminded me of was Clue from 1982.
Yeah, dude, that movie rocks.
That movie's so good. So that was our little like trifecta of semi-related movies there. But I know what you mean with like the remakes and stuff. I just, you know, I do think that there was a period of time in like the 80s. You think about just like plots of movies in the 80s, especially sci-fi and like just sort of like social commentary. Like I don't love movies from the 80s in general, but like they really had a lot of like original ideas and stuff. Like I even think about I started watching that movie Demolition Man at one point, and it was kind of dumb.
Slapper, dude.
It was kind of dumb, but like I was like, I kind of love this, just like
that's
this
like
take on this plot, you know?
Like, all time Wesley Snipes performance, man.
Yeah,
he's killing it. I think I'm like an 80s stan for movies.
I think it's a good period. I think I talked about this a little bit on the Videodrome podcast, but like I don't love the cinematography of movies from the 80s. It's it's very like it's not pretty. It's more a lot of them are very like brutal, and it's when video started to be like they stopped using film and they started like experimenting with video. So I don't love I'm kind of starting to like it for its own, you know, by its own merits, but like I think that's always been like, as a film snob that I am, I think it's always been like a bit of a tripping point for me.
I get that. They're not for everybody. I don't know why I love them so much. I have such a blend of like kind of film snobbery, but also like love, like just
total populism.
Yeah. But also just like shitty. Like I loved The Wicker Man the same amount that I loved like Den of Thieves with Gerard Butler, like a horrible action movie. So I think that's like, I think the 80s are a nice blend of like, you get like Alien, like something like a movie like Alien, and it's just like, it's so absolutely fun and intense while also still being like pretty campy and goofy and also a really well-made film. And I love that shit, man.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the 80s is probably best for like the sci-fi genre in general. It's kind of like obsessed with that idea, but I really appreciate you picking this movie. I loved it. I can't wait to watch it again at some point.
Go watch this movie, man. If nothing for the music and the Christopher Lee performance alone, just go watch this movie. But yeah, that's about it, man. Thanks for having me on. It was great.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have you back soon to do another non-horror movie.
I got some ideas. I'm excited.
You know, the channel's always churning stuff out, so there's always something to watch on the channel, baby.
All right, right on, brother.